seen you on the French Open, Oogie.
Oh yeah, and
we're
the
going
story
in.
about Michael Chang, huh?
Well, we're gonna save that for John for next time. I'll let him tell it. But
Perfect.
John was Michael Chang's coach the year after he won the French Open. He was defending champion, so we just wanted to get his experience on that, coming in as a coach of a defending champion. That's an interesting look, right?
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So hopefully yep. he'll make his way back to us. But if not, let's discuss the French Open right now and what you've been seeing. And we're going into the second week, right?
Oh yeah.
Fourth rounds, quarterfinals. What have you been looking at? I know some of our picks went down.
That's right. I was going to say Sinner's gone. Medvedev is gone. That was expected.
Oh my
though,
gosh. Medvedev was not expected in the first round.
Well,
that
okay.
was an upset.
And maybe not first round. You're right. But he's never won a title except this year. So
I know,
like,
but come on, upset to the guy he lost to? That was
yeah,
like
exactly.
Shocking.
That's who he lost to. That like who?
Yeah.
You're right.
And then
right.
Sinner, that
yeah.
was a tough one.
Yeah, that was a bummer. I mean,
he,
I was like,
he saved some match points there. He hit this
yeah.
unbelievable overhead forehand ripper.
Yeah.
And then, but he just, you know, he couldn't get it done. He was up
yeah,
and then
right.
he had it, but it's okay. He'll be back.
Hey, there's still a couple of good guys in there. Alcaraz is there. Djokovic still in. Rune
hey,
and Rude.
Your guy, Davidic Fokina, made a good run in the first two sets against Djokovic.
He should have won that second set. He had set points. And yeah, he was close to make it one all. But as you can tell, to win that last point to conclude a set against a legend player like Djokovic, it's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, I could tell with I was watching the match and I was like, okay, they're rallying. They're equal. They're rallying. And then suddenly, oops, a little stress shot. And then Fokina misses or he hits shorter. And Djokovic is like, no big deal. I'm in the third round against I don't know who. So that, you know, that tells a lot about, you know, mentally who has been there and who's done it and who hasn't been there. And that was huge. My pick was a little bit like, okay, I hope this guy goes through, sees Djokovic go down a little bit so he doesn't get that ahead of Nadal. And but, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Alcaraz is going to take him down, though.
Yeah, we'll see. And, hey, we got John Austin back. You froze on us, John.
You asked your question, that the thing froze up.
That's okay. And it was such a good question.
how come you can freeze in Arizona? What's going on there?
I don't know. The Wi-Fi went out.
It was only, well, we lost our computer modem last night. So we have we're not on the internet right now. So I have my personal hotspot on right now.
Well,
so.
That's okay.
No
all right. Well,
stuff.
We got you back. That's what matters. And Oogie and I would just, we were, as Brad Gilbert would say, we were vamping until you found your way back to us.
So, talking about like whoever was left in the draw, like Alcaraz and Djokovic.
Yeah, going into week two.
What a match that's going to be, huh?
Yeah.
Oof, can't wait. Can't wait to see that. It's going to be great.
Right.
So going into week two, we are with the French Open, but I want to go back because now we have John, and I got to talk about you were Michael Chang's coach when he was defending champion, which was such a big deal because he was an American, Chinese descent, first Asian to win a Grand Slam. What was it like going into the French Open with him as he was preparing for the main draw?
It was very, very cool. We got treated very nicely because normally I've been there before, practiced with other players at the French Open, training them, and we had practiced on the outside courts. Not so good. As Michael being defending champ, we got to practice on stadium court, Court Central. Let me tell you, that was like velvet. And its own crew that carried that court alone. The court was immaculate. Playing on it was like heaven. And then one night, my brother Jeff, who's an agent, was there. We're going to go meet him at a really hole-in-the-wall place in somewhere in Paris for frog legs, which is supposed to be world-renowned frog legs.
Ooh.
So we got player transportation to take us to the restaurant. Well, the driver got lost. He pulled over and he saw a cop, asked the cop for direction. The next thing we know, the lights were on in the cop car, spinning around, and we got a police escort to the restaurant. It's kind of because we're Michael Chang's coach.
I love it.
Right.
Wow.
Pretty special. The most important question is, how were the frog legs?
Fantastic.
Really?
It must have been awesome.
The fantastic.
With the garlic, a little bit, though. That's going to be awesome.
Oogie would have loved that meal.
Oh,
they were
of course.
How much they were
oh, I love that. That's
now, how did he do that year?
Quarterfinals.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, right.
So. What did he feel like going into it? What was his mindset?
You know, he's always ready to battle. He's always a battle. He's going to give it his all no matter what. So that's the thing. He always prepares very well. He had his own personal trainer with him. He did a great job with him. Former USC track coach was helping him get in shape and get in the move and help with any injuries he might have. Mm-hmm. But he's always ready to battle. And you know, French and playing the clay, it's a battle. And you got to be ready. You got to pack a lunch, especially with Michael playing. So it was great. Michael was a wonderful person.
What did you do to help him get through to the quarterfinals that year?
Just I'd watch some other opponents, kind of get some of my opinions on that. And plus, his dad, very smart guy, and Carl's brother would also give their opinions on strategies. And I'd give my little notes on what we should do and some things to do. So,
yeah, I remember his brother, I think, was really tactical, and they were playing ping pong in between, you know, games.
And we're always
having fun with that. So working mental all the time.
Right.
Yeah, that's great. I have a funny Michael Chang story. My mom did the article on him after he won the French Open.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he was having a practice at La Costa. And Oogie, did you ever go to La Costa in San Diego with me? I don't think you did.
No.
You would have loved it. Anyway, John, you've been to La Costa.
I have.
Okay. They also had grass courts there. I practiced there before Wimbledon, but Michael was hitting on center court. I forget who he was hitting with. And my mom was watching him, and she brought me, because she always brought me on her interviews so I could see what the professional athletes were like and maybe
some
absorb
good examples. Yeah,
exactly. So Michael lost his practice match, and he was really sad. I might have been, maybe I was 7. And
you failed for him, probably. You're like,
I was very empathetic because he was upset and he left. So we went to lunch, and we were going to lunch. I got to come along because my mom was interviewing. So we went to the hotel bistro, and we sat, we came in, and I had, at the time I was into like theater. I mean, I'm still into theater, but at the time I really loved it. And I had these fish faces, like different kind of masks. And I had this one that was a fish face. So I decided to put it on and sit down at lunch with Michael Chang because I wanted to make him laugh, to make him feel better that he lost his practice match.
That's great. Did it work?
And it worked. It worked.
Good.
And then, how can it not work?
Yeah. I mean, I had this
little
fish,
girl at 7 years old with a fish
face.
So
I just remember that vividly, that I just wanted to cheer him up. Ooh. But Michael was always nice to me. And growing up, I saw him occasionally. And then when I became pro, he was always kind. He was a very kind guy.
Very kind. Very, very, very wonderful.
And now he has a daughter in the juniors that's doing very well.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Two of my kids have played her.
You're right. That's awesome. His best attributes when you were coaching him in Roland Garros, what was it? Was he very good at analyzing other players, or was he very hard worker? And obviously, a lot of these things together, but what were his best attributes?
An incredible, incredible hard worker. You never seen anyone train like he does. When I used to work at PGA West in the Palm Springs desert area.
Yeah.
We would train really hard and make him run and feed balls and make him run and just kill him. And he would do it. But then he'd go work with his trainer for an hour. He would have these bands and these cords and make him run against those things, and he would do it. And you wake up and do it all again the next day. I mean, you talk about a work ethic. Wow. An amazing work ethic. And very humble, and never thought anyone owed him anything. He'd always, do what he had to do and work hard every day.
That's right. Just the best attitude. Like,
right.
Looks to me like it's Carlos Alcaraz a little bit esque.
Right. Right. He was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
That's cool. All right. So, John, we got to get your thoughts. Oogie and I were, as we were vamping, we were talking about the men's side, what we've seen in this first whole week going into the second week. So who are your picks and what have you seen? And give us some analyzation.
Well, I must say the other day, Djokovic looked fantastic. His last match. He looks very, very good. And You know what I love the commentators after his match were saying about him that they loved about him? But he's always looking for the next solution. He's looking for the answer for a problem he doesn't know he has yet. He's always thinking ahead and thinking of everything, which I love that. You said you're going to ask me a question. Who would I like to coach? I'd like to coach him because it'd be a real mind challenge. Because when Becker was coached by Bollettieri, Bollettieri said it was one of his toughest students because Boris is very challenging mentally, asked a lot of questions. And it looks like Djokovic asked a lot of questions. So so that's what I'd like. It'd be fun to have a discussion about what are our solutions. Because as you know, as a player, you're always finding solutions.
Yep.
Things don't always work, but you got to figure it out, as you said earlier. So that's why he'd be fun to coach or work with, because we're going to figure it out. I'd like to figure it out too.
All right, Ugi, who would you like to coach right now on the tour?
Wow, for me, it's obvious that Carlos Alcaraz is my pick for sure for that one.
Right.
It's just because for me, when you wrote that question this week, I was thinking about it and I was like, okay, obviously I want somebody who knows the game, who's ready to commit, who's going to give it all, like just like Michael Chang said, like Michael did, like John said. But who has the most passion about his sport? For me, that's the most important stuff. If you're really passionate about it from A to Z, then I want to be with you every day. And I'll be in the wins, the losses, it doesn't matter. Because the passion factor, it's the most important one. So whoever is the most passionate about his sport, for me right now, Carlos has that. Because you see him winning or losing, he's kind of smiling through the matches. And to me, I kind of play like that. When I'm playing still in my senior tournaments, that's what I do. I just say, you know, whenever I'm losing, I'm like, okay, why am I here? I just want to have fun. I just want to hit my shots. So to me, that's what I think he's doing. And that, like, to me is like sunshine on everybody else. And everybody's we're inspired watching him. And even my colleague, Denis Shapovalov, said that in a press conference this week. He's like my idol. I have to play him. He's inspiring. I like him. And I mean, the guy's like ranked 20 in the world and he's
and the Dennis same level is old, almost. The elder.
Exactly. And that's big for me.
As they say, Carlito, he's amazing. His passion, you can feel it from the TV. It's amazing. And the commentators were saying it the other day, how wonderful he is when he comes in for the press. He's just always happy, gives him the time. He understands he has to do it. It's easy to work with, and he's just great. Yeah. He's happy to be out there, which is wonderful.
He's a good ambassador for the sport, and he can hopefully cross it over with generation.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. Because generation. I think John is as a very good point because the way you're treating the press for me tells me a lot about somebody's character. Because when you're addressing the press, it's like you're addressing just regular people, whoever is watching and listening. And if you look at politicians, I'm not sure sometimes they do it. They're like, well, you've been elected and you have to represent us. And same thing for tennis and the press. I think that relationship has to be free and just be yourself and very honest. And for me, that's really important.
That's so important you said that because, Ugi, I was always, as John knows, I was always open and honest. And in the 2000s, there were more characters on the tour and we weren't as measured and we told the truth and we weren't worried about our brand and Instagram and social media. And I feel like Carlos is bringing a fresh air approach and you're not so buttoned up. It's important because in tennis, you're an ambassador to the sport. When you become a professional tennis player and you get fans and you make it on the big stage, your job is to win matches and do the best you can be, but also to bring people to the sport. Our sport is small. It's big in the world, but it's also small in the world. And it's important to keep carrying it on and not letting like pickleball take it over. So going to the media, going to the press, speaking your truth is so important. And on that note, Sabalenka ditched her press conference. So what do we think of that? I mean, she had a great match against Sloane Stephens.
Yes, she did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was something about the safety, right, John? I think you said something about.
Well, I read that she said she was afraid for her safety because there was a Russian media person who was asking lots of questions about the war. And you know what? I'm sorry, sports is sports. It's really not a platform for us to talk about world politics. You know, that's a political agenda. I don't think we should delve into politics as sports people. You know, it's our own personal views, which really not for, you know, necessarily to share, because it's very trying, you know. You never know who's going to take exception to what you say.
Exactly.
And, you know, Monica Salas.
Yeah.
What a tragic, tragic thing that happened.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. Right. Well, I don't like that she skipped it, but I understand it because it's a lot different. I mean, when I go into the press, people would ask me what my father's doing, and it wasn't about war, but it was still upsetting. And I answered in correct fashion. It was tough to get asked that every time, but my country wasn't at war and I wasn't a part of Belarus or Russia. So I can see her side where it's traumatic, right? You're not shaking hands with any of the Ukrainians.
Right.
You're getting asked about it all the time. And if she's scared, she has a right to be scared. I just feel like the WTA needs to protect her a little more, the Grand Slam, and maybe kick that guy out and say, what you said, John, just sports questions. Don't ask about the war. Come on, it's a Grand Slam. Your mental health is really important to get through these 2 weeks. And they got to protect the athlete then.
And you know what? That's what's great about sports, because you can be you know, whatever, a guy, girl, and whatever religion or color of skin or all that stuff goes out the window whenever you play sports, you know? And
it
I truly
matter.
Believe and if somebody's into that stuff, they're going to be kicked out of sports, period, because we don't have time for that. And that's what the best part about sport is, because that gets people together. And the war, there's no way that people in tennis have to do anything with that. I mean, Sabalenka or the Russian players or the Ukrainian, everybody's a victim of that situation.
Yeah,
for sure.
And it's become so polarizing. But look at today with Kasatkina and Svitolina. Kasatkina's a very good sport, and she gives the girls thumbs up because she knows the Ukrainians aren't going to shake anybody Russian or Ukrainian or Belarusian's hand.
Yeah.
But and Svitolina, Ugi, you said she gave her the thumbs up as well, right?
Well, there's for sure, that's exactly what happened. And there's great respect there between those two girls. You know why? Because Kasatkina is from Russia. And I think 2 years ago, because she's a lesbian, she said out loud she is. And she had to move to Spain to just live
so
there.
She's had tough times.
It was being bugged, and it was Russia, you know, they have something against that or something. And she didn't feel right at home. And she had to move to Spain to, you know, to live her life and just to be happy about it. And a lot of girls on tour said thumbs up to that, you know, because you just want to live your life having fun and not thinking about whatever, you know, your environment is bringing down. So there's a lot of respect there. Two girls that are top of their game, you know, they're top 20 level for sure. You know, they're two of the best players in the world, and they had a great match. And Kasatkina was gonna, you know, that thing, Svitolina was not going to shake hands and stuff, being from Ukraine and the other one from Russia. So they just gave thumbs up. And it was just kind of really nice.
But then the French booed them.
But then the French crowd boos a lot.
They boo everybody unless you're French.
What about Taylor Fritz?
Oh, I saw that. Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
He literally couldn't speak. He couldn't speak in his press, his after encore interview.
You're right. Marion tried to quiet the crowd.
He shushed him.
Yeah.
I mean, you see that in sports whenever in NHL or NFL or NBA, you're on the opponent's floor or field and you just shush the crowd.
But I kind of love it though. You got to love a French crowd. Look, they're going to carry on Monfils to win the match. And then if you shush them, they will turn on you.
Yeah. So is the U.S. crowd did against Medvedev a couple of years U.S. holding back, right?
Yeah. We need more loud crowds. Do you guys agree?
Because when I first joined the tour, I played at the Paris Indoors and I played a French player. And talk about loud and proud. Man, were they loud. And so the same thing. It's like, you got to shush them.
Yeah.
And I, when it was so loud, you couldn't hear your own thoughts. I said some things I won't repeat about the crowd. But it was like, okay, got me through it, you know? Right. So
I love it.
Right.
I think
the best way to, because our, you know, our audience is going like, okay, are most people watching that, they're going to be against Taylor Fritz, they're going to be with him, because that's a tough cookie to swallow. Because imagine there's like 5,000 people, not against you, but for the opponent. So that's, right, I think that's right, really important to know, because I was playing in Quebec City and I'm from the south side, I mean, there's like 200 people in the crowd. It's small, but still the same example for that guy, because he's at that club and the finals. Right. And they love him because he trains there. And they're not against you. They're for him.
I think
if Taylor really got that in his head a lot through the match, then you get through the match, you win the match. People, the crowd has been to the opponent, and then you say, thank you very much, guys. I think that match was great because a lot of emotions. Of course, you guys are cheering for him, which is normal. And then, but he did not deal with that great, because you can't shush the crowd. I mean, come on, what do you expect? The French people are going to say, great, we're cheering for you now. Right. And if you win the match and you say, you know what, guys, thank you so much. You've been great crowd, though. Next time, I think I'm playing somebody from, let's say, Spain. I hope you'll be with me more. You can
turn them on your side.
That's what I would have done, because that's the only thing you can, right? You can't do anything else except trying to win your match and respect the crowd, and they respect you more.
I heard him a match before, maybe put another French player. We said, thank you. You know, thank you for cheering.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. He said, I use that and you're cheering for me. You're cheering. That was for me. You know, so thank you. Keep cheering loud. You're doing it for me. Right. So what he said.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The best is when the crowd's cheering for you, but when they're not, you just got to turn it around and stay mentally tough and block it out.
Right.
That's right.
That's and why as, tennis as, is another, it's like a great challenge for your brain.
Right. Exactly. It's a huge challenge. And then let's say you win that match, and for sure that crowd will first respect you more because you've beat their player, and they kind of will cheer you on for the rest of the tournament, because when you beat somebody, what do they say when they leave the court? They say, okay, I hope you win the tournament because I lost against you. And so the crowd reacts a little bit like that, right? So if you play against another French guy, of course they're going to cheer again for him. But see, he lost the next match to Cerundolo, a guy from Argentina.
Right.
And that guy from Argentina was going, give me more. And so that guy used the crowd great because he knew that the crowd was going to be for him, and because they were against Fritz. So Cerundolo was really smart about it. He used the crowd a little bit, and see, he got the win. So it's tough.
Use
tough
him. Use the crowd to your advantage.
Yeah.
All right, so we got to talk a little bit about the women, guys. What did you think going in? Who are your picks going forward? Let's start with John.
It's hard to go against Iga. She's playing great. She is playing fantastic, you know, so it's hard. And interesting, though, Svitolina is a new French champion. I mean, they're cheering for her. You know, she's married to Monfils, and there's no French players left, so they're all taken for her, which is kind of cool.
So, Oogie, she has the crowd on her side.
Right.
Oh, yeah. See? Because she's Monfils, wife and girlfriend, so for sure she'll have the big advantage there.
All right,
there,
so, John, you're picking Świątek.
Yes, I am.
Okay, for the semis, or are you taking her all the way to the finals?
Whole thing.
Okay, all right. Oogie, who are you picking?
Well, you know what? In 2 days, it's going to be tough because it's going to be Svitolina against Sabalenka. So that's going to be a crowd pleaser there for sure.
Well,
it's going to be going to be awesome. I mean, of course, the pick of, you know, Świątek is kind of an obvious one. I mean, she won 6-0, 6-0. I mean, come on. She's like the third woman with the highest percentage of big old sets. Hey, they put that stat on TV. So I thought that was a lot. But I think Coco Gauff is sneaking there, huh? Your player, Alex.
She's playing well, too.
Yeah, she is playing well. Well, no, I picked Muhova and who else did I pick? Jabeur. Remember, I told you Jabeur is going to make a run. They're still in Oogie.
I like Jabeur. She's a fighter. She's got, what do you say? She's got a lot of grit.
She does. And she's going under the radar. She's a fun player to watch. She brings the entertainment. Yeah,
right.
So
you're right. And talking about
Muhova,
representing tennis, you know, being the
Tunisian
flame
woman.
Bearer. For all the Arab people, she's like a big idol over there. And the French crowd, because in Paris, there's a lot of Arab people.
Yep.
You know, a lot of Tunisia, Morocco, a lot of those. So
and my other
pick,
Muhova has been holding her serve and sneaking through in two sets everywhere. So I know Svitolina, Sabalenka, that's going to be a showdown. But then we can't leave Pavel Chenkova out. You're right. She's a finalist from 2021. So that whole section right there is going to be interesting to watch.
Right.
And there's, then the top. Yeah,
there's a lot of good players.
I'm going to go Swiatek with the top part. And Coco Gauff, she played well to get out of that tough first set loss. I liked what she did in the second and third against a girl younger than her, Mira.
Yeah, that's got to be tough for her to play Andreeva. She's going, what?
But I think her running into Iga is going to be
hard.
But you never know.
Coco is a great ball and she's a great athlete, but sometimes your forehand goes awry, you know?
So, that's the understatement of the century, John. Sometimes our forehand goes awry. What were we talking about before we came on? The rhythm and timing and the follow through of the forehand. I feel like Coco could use some help on that.
Do you think it's too late for her to change her grip a little bit or no? Because they were saying that on TV.
Well, she hasn't changed it. Why would she change it? So
never too late.
It's never – look at Nadal, look at Djokovic. They're always tweaking. I feel like she should have changed it 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. She can still do it, though. But you're right because, you know, we'll see at Wimbledon because that's problematic. If you slice to her forehand on that grass court, the grip is
tough. But I have to tell you, I'm changing the 11-year-old student that I have. She had Ugi and I have discussed this, John. I've texted you on it, John. She's had a far Western for 4 years.
That can be very
and she's 11. It's really hard. Now we've shifted to a semi, but it's really hard. She slips. The grip slips as she gets under pressure. And it's like 9 months. She's doing better, but it's tough. So when you say, could Coco move it over? Yes, but under pressure, look what happens under pressure now with her forehand. What's going to happen if she shifts?
Usually under pressure, your weakest link shows up, as you know.
Yeah. Right. So I don't know. She'd have to have somebody come in and take 6 to 8 months off.
Right.
The tour. Well, is she going to do that?
You can play with it. The other thing is, too, she has to want to do it and believe she's the right thing. And also, too, part of it maybe she hasn't because what made her good?
She's her stubborn. Speed.
No, she's stubborn. You know, she's a fighter.
She's a fighter. Mm-hmm. And her speed.
People like that are very stubborn people. Mm-hmm. They're not going to give in. So it's sometimes hard to change when you're that stubborn, you know, honestly.
Well said, that's Professor.
it takes some. You're right. It takes somebody like Serena would say, well, listen, let's go hit some balls and then maybe I show you somebody with that credibility would probably could do something like that. But somebody who's maybe not as credible, but would just show her examples. Like, this person
is here. Come on. Muratoglu's on her team. You think they haven't shown her examples? Or you think they're just keeping it there? That's the question. Have they talked about it? Of course they've talked about it. But is the grip change really an issue, or are they just talked about extending her elbow more and giving her more space?
Or maybe bend her knees more, get lower.
Yeah. We need an insider there.
Show her videos of Leila Fernandez, you know, how she bends her knees.
Quick timing.
Right.
I know you like her. She's another fighter who – turns, yes, split step and turn is super early.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But she can't play her game if she's not quick on her turn and getting down low.
Right.
She need that footwork going. Yeah, you're right.
Right. It takes her a lot of steps to get covered on the court.
Yeah. You know? All right. Well, this will be fun, John. You'll have to come back next week to discuss the finals.
That'd be fun if you'll have me back.
Of course I'll have you back. Are you kidding? I know, Ugi, we got to touch on a little basketball. It's tied 1-1. You watched the game tonight.
Oof. Huge.
Miami, end of the game Miami there. Was impressive tonight. I'm very happy.
Now, John watched it too. I'm the only one that didn't watch.
Well, you were on the court, so there you go.
Yeah, that's okay. I have the excuse. Oh,
yeah, you were doing your deeds, your best.
Okay, so 1-1.
Throwing. Yeah.
Heat Nuggets, it's going to be a game.
Denver was up 1-0 in the series, and tonight I mean, towards the end of the fourth quarter, just the heat turned it up. And so they were up a little bit. And then at the end, by 3 points, Murray goes for it. But poof.
Oh, yeah.
Misses. So you, one
off. Barely missed that shot.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I thought it would foul. I thought they would foul right. him just to make right. sure he right. just hits twos and then right. came over. Right. But he right. took a chance there. So
yeah, well, that's all right. You got to take a chance. And now they go on, move on to game three.
You remember, I mean, do you imagine being in Miami right now? They have like the Florida Panthers are in the finals as well. I mean, they right. lost the first game against the Vegas Knights, but they're still there. So and Sunrise is close to Miami,
yeah,
of course.
Hot time. Oogie, you got to fly down to Miami. Hot nights Jeez. In Miami. John, you got to take Karen. All right. So I have a good quote for you guys for this week. John, okay. Oogie and I like to do quotes. I mean, maybe okay. mostly I do the quotes and I throw them at Oogie and he has a little repartee with me. All That's right. Awesome. So this quote is coming. It's very special, right? It's like, I'm so excited. This movie is happening in July. Finally, it's going to be a whole movement. Oogie, I've touched on it before. And okay. it's just kind of reminds me of me, except I need a boyfriend, but that's okay. Okay. You ready?
What is Bart? It?
Okay. So the voiceover comes from Helen Mirren and okay. it's for the Barbie movie directed by Greta Gerwig, starring Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling. I'm very excited about this movie. You guys have to go see it. Okay. Barbie has a great day every day. Ken only has a great day if Barbie looks at him. How funny wow. is that?
Wow.
Because, you know, that's... it's really true. Like, you guys only have a great day if your wife looks at you, right?
That's it?
Yeah, she's wow. got to, like, look at you, right?
Well, you're pretty simple then, obviously, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, the male-female thing. I feel like if I had a boyfriend, he would just have a great day because I would look at him and I'd look all cute. But, you know, I have a great day every day, regardless if I have a boyfriend. Discuss the right. semis and finals. I'm looking well, forward
thank
to
you
it.
Having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yes.
And I learned a lot today.
You thank sure you. Did. And we learned a lot as well. And everyone listening, have a good week. See you next time.